Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I'm your girl, Jacqueline, back with Mr. Mark Ellis. I will say, sir, it's just good to see you on a consistent basis these days.
It's good to see you, and boy, did we have fun last night.
We did have fun last night. Ladies and gentlemen, occasionally I will text Mark and say, hey, do you want to go to a movie? Most of the time he says no because he's a busy man and, you know, dog stepfather.
I pretend to be busy.
But last night I got you and it was, I think, very fitting considering the movie we're doing today.
So Jacqueline invited me as her plus one to go see Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part One. Nailed it.
Yeah.
And so we watched that in anticipation of this movie that we're talking about, which I actually watched on a plane coming back from New York where I was doing shows the last weekend, a couple weekends ago, actually, now. So I'm very excited to talk about this movie. This was like this movie's always in my head as far as like the Mission Impossible franchise, even just Tom Cruise movies.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the best. It might even be the worst Mission Impossible movie. But the fact that we're talking about Mission Impossible 2, it's just near and dear to my heart for reasons that I still can't fully articulate. So maybe we can work it out during the next hour.
I have a theory about this because this movie was when I really think of anything that Mission Impossible was, it embraced the style of it. Because, like, John Woo may not be this, but he has the theatricality and camp of a drag queen. And that is what it is about this movie that is so iconic. And it was, like, at the height of, like, the MTV Movie Awards of it all. It was just such a different time. Like, the internet would not let this movie survive today. And I think that's why it's such a great throwback. But I'll go ahead and ask our guest joining us today to talk about the John Woo, Tom Cruise, and I think by extension, Ben Stiller classic that is Mission Impossible 2. Crit, sir, he is a writer, host, and consultant. Welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.
No, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So tell us, what is your history with MI2? Like, are you an Ethan Hunt fan? I've called him Ethan Hawke in my head like 8 times,
that
by
works.
The way.
That tracks.
But, like, what is your sort of relationship to this story?
You know what? I really like the Mission Impossible movies. I love Ethan Hunt as a character. And as far as MI2 goes, I do not think it deserves, I think along the same lines as Mark, like, I don't think it deserves the low rating it has. Do I think it deserves the highest rating? Absolutely freaking not. But I think, you know, for consistency's sake, I think it's somewhere, it's not where it should
be. Yeah, I mean, it's the only rotten movie out of the franchise, and that ain't going to happen with Dead Reckoning, I don't think. So
I don't think so either,
This is 56% on the tomato meter, which is like, it's fresh adjacent. But then it's even lower with the audience, 42%. That's kind of where I think, like, I can understand this movie being rotten with critics. The audiences, I'm wondering what left them cold.
I think people need to appreciate how Mission Impossible came out of the blue and ended up being a good movie. This was that sort of, like, backlash to that. Because I remember when they announced Mission Impossible, everyone's like, what, the cheesy show from, like, the 60s where the tape explodes. Like, people were like, what? Like, this is... I remember this. Like, Martin Landau was at the premiere and people were like, oh, you were in the original? Like, it was just, like, such a disconnect.
Was Martin Landau in the original?
Yeah.
She's the research department of the show.
Wait, but didn't they both, like, the original cast, they were like, I hate this film.
Yeah, yeah, no, it ended up being like a whole thing more so than that. But yeah, just like this idea that this movie ended up being so good as it was. It's almost like John Wick. It was a surprise. And then imagine if the second John Wick ended up being something that was like a big disappointment. I think this got like a lot of backlash, but we'll talk about that. Either way, we are going to break down, you know, Mission Impossible 2 because Dead Reckoning is now out in theaters, or it just came out 7/12. We're doing this the day after. Also, go ahead and head on over RottenTomatoes.com and check out all the Mission Impossible movies ranked by Tomato Meter. Again, the only rotten one, but these later entries are just like kind of killing the game, surpassing anything else that we have. I will say this before we sort of get into it. This is courtesy of a fan shout out, Alex Heller, who basically has decided that this is the one we're going with today. So I will say this. I think we're going to have a lot to discuss. I'm not in any way sad about it, but this is definitely a movie where like all the parts were supposed to work, but didn't. But Mark, before we get much further, please tell us, what exactly is the synopsis of Mission Impossible 2?
Of Mission Impossible 2. All right. So Ethan Hunt is a super agent. He just wants to spend some time on vacation, but wouldn't you know it, he gets called back into action because there's this devastating virus called Chimera, and we got to stop it. The scientists who are working on it, some nefarious things went down with them. There's some sort of evil conglomerate that's trying to get their hands on it so they can have the virus and the cure, because that's where the money is. And so we need Ethan Hunt to step in and stop it before this thing kills possibly everybody in the entire world. He can't do it alone. It's up to Anthony Hopkins, who is his boss in this movie, to tell him, hey, you need to recruit whoever you want, but we got to have Tandy Newton at the time. We got to have her on board as well. She's a master thief and she has connections to the person that we're trying to get at, but maybe Tom Cruise has some history with that same person too. And so it all ends up being a slam whiz bang action thriller and possibly the greatest shampoo commercial I've ever seen in my life. The hair in this movie is so devastatingly well shot. It makes me so insecure when I look at my own locks in the mirror.
Just gonna say, campy drag queen. He knows a good wig. Like, that was not even a wig. That was just like the natural hair that Tom Cruise gave him. But he knows the power of hair. Any drag queen knows the power of hair. Before we go any further
You looked at me when you sit there. I was like, wait a minute.
No.
You have some amazing locks.
You have amazing locks, but I was not going to put the drag queen on you. I was just going to put the idea of like, you understand what I mean. I do want to ask real quick, though, before we sort of like ask the penultimate question, is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong, which is your favorite entry in this? If you're such a big Ethan Hunt fan, like, which is your favorite?
Listen, I'm a Fallout fan.
Okay.
Come on, you got Angela Bassett. I feel like the action scenes in that, like the Henry Cavill, you know, the bathroom brawl, like, nothing tops that.
Pumping the guns.
Yeah, exactly. I got no guns to pump, but
I can't even physically do that move that Henry Cavill. Like, I've tried to do it, and it just looks like I look like an octopus. Like, I can't do what Henry Cavill does in that movie. And Fallout is the number one rated Mission Impossible movie according to the Tomato Meter. 97% certified fresh. Still a Ghost Protocol guy.
Ghost Protocol?
Yeah.
Is that Paula Patton?
That's Paula Patton.
Yeah, that's Paula Patton.
The tallest building in the world.
I'm sorry, but...
Okay, I'm going to be so weird about this. Call me a traditionalist. I live for the episodic feel of the first film.
Yay!
I really do love the first one. Also, it has Jean-Rene from... Professional.
And?
What do you mean?
William H. Bonney, Billy the Kid himself, Estevez.
Emilio Estevez, yes, yes.
No, meets his end too early in the movie for my taste.
Hasta lasagna, don't get any on you, as he says. Yeah. Wow, I can't believe I put that on there. I did. I did that, ladies and gentlemen. I did that for you. But let's go ahead and get it down to brass tacks. Kritzer, I'm thinking I know where you are on this, but Rotten Tomatoes, wrong on this one, I'm guessing. Like, or how far did you feel they are wrong?
I feel like... Okay, so I know you said you love the first Mission Impossible. I think it's better than the first Mission Impossible. The first one, you know, it's iconic. It's the original. You got the wire hang. You got the, you have the introduction of these characters. But I feel like the acting was so much better. Like, the writing on the first one's bad. Like, Kitteridge in the first one, you know, the IMF, you know, director, he's terrible. You watch it, he cannot act. Like, it's just so corny. And I'm like,
shaded Kittredge.
I'm sorry, but I'm just like, what is this, honey? Like, I couldn't do him. And I feel like, you know, you got a much better villain out of Sean Ambrose. I feel like he's, and you got, I don't know, they're just okay, so it's giving Scandal a little bit, you know, with Olivia Pope running between two white men, you know, like that's what it's kind of giving with Tandy, with Naya. But I think her chemistry is great with Tom Cruise. And I feel like, because, you know, I know the story's about the virus and all that, but really it's about, you know,
about how madly right. in love
exactly.
Tom Cruise and Tandy Newton fall overnight with each
other. Screwing once, and yeah. now like they're just.
Even before they hook up, just them racing cars, they're like, you're the only one for me.
Just spinning around looking at each other. It's like,
I feel like 56%, as much as like I have strong like inclinations towards this movie, and like it conjures like good memories of my past, because I was like, you know, I was 20 when this movie came out. I still feel like 56% is pretty much right where this movie should be.
Wow.
I love John Woo, and obviously I love the Mission Impossible movies and Tom Cruise. I could be happy with it getting into fresh territory,
mm-hmm.
but some part of me, much like the scar on Tom Cruise's face at the end of this movie due to a knife fight, I like Mission Impossible 2 being the scar on this franchise. It helps it stand out in a way. So I'm kind of perfectly fine with 56%. The audience, I will take umbrage with. 42%. Come on, audience. Get your act together. That's got to get higher.
Wow. Okay. So for the style, camp, and just sheer awesomeness of this movie, I'd put it certified fresh.
Okay.
Because this movie, I was literally like watching like YouTube videos getting ready for this. Because like, I don't need to watch this again. And I found myself like pulling up the movie and I watched the whole thing actually through. Because I've seen this movie a couple times. I don't think I need a revamp on the plot or anything. And then I'm watching and I'm realizing, I don't even want to know this plot. This plot is ridiculous. The virus. Like, again, it's just, it feels...
I have more thoughts on this plot. Once we get into movie
no,
talk.
No, we'll get into movie talk.
I have some reasoning behind why I appreciate this movie.
But basically what I was going to say is the plot is a 46%. The style is an 80. So like if you kind of average it out, that's kind of the where I feel on this. There's so many bad plot moments in this. I cannot make this movie a fresh movie. But man, it's pretty.
It's giving
so
drama.
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
I love the drama.
Yeah.
Anyway, gorgeous. Let's have Tim remind us what critics were saying about this film back at the time.
2 minutes with Tim.
Brian De Palma's eccentric take on the classic TV show was certainly not bereft of great action scenes. Tom Cruise infiltrating that computer room remains iconic. But even if it wasn't wholly successful, Mission Impossible 2 is where the series as we know it begins. Less intrigue and loads more action. To quote Roger Ebert, the first Mission Impossible had a plot that no one understood. Mission Impossible 2 has a plot you don't need to understand. By and large, critics were impressed with the cast, but felt the incredible stunts only did so much to distract from a general lack of depth and character development. Mission Impossible 2 is rotten at 56% on the tomato meter with 155 reviews, and it has a 42% audience score. And just for comparison, the best reviewed installment of the series, Mission Impossible Fallout from 2018, is certified fresh at 97%. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, David Anson of Newsweek called it a slick, expensive, bullet-ridden thriller that is oddly dull, the last thing you'd expect. However, in a fresh review, Mick LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle wrote, it's fun, it's laughable, it has moments of excitement, moments of sheer idiocy, and moments of sheer idiotic excitement. The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, your cranium may crave more substance, but your eyes will feast on the amazing action sequences. So that's Mission Impossible 2. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people who spend their weekends driving motorcycles off cliffs.
I mean, I wish that's what I spend my weekend doing. Most of the time it's watching movies, which is why it's good that we're going to talk about one. A little segment we call Movie Talk. Brian, keep
that was
music.
Good.
I mean, really, like, you're probably the most active person I know, and you get on a plane and like talk to people at bars.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I don't ride motorcycles. I don't do any of that. You'll never find me on a motorcycle.
But at least you're moving. Everyone,
I'm moving.
You know, everyone
I'm shaking.
Else I know is just kind of like, yeah, we're here.
I'm around.
We're in a theater, maybe at home. We may call each other to each other's houses, so guess what? We can watch more movies together.
But yeah, and this one I actually did watch on a plane.
Oh, you did watch?
I watched Mission Impossible 2 on a plane, and I was so pissed because one of the things that I loved about this movie was the Metallica song, I Disappear, that they wrote for the movie, and it's the tag on the credits.
And they didn't do it?
And because it's like, it's a plane movie, and so they speed by it, And it's just the Mission Impossible theme with the credits run up super high. And I'm like, I was ready. I was ready to hear Lars and the boys. And so no Metallica. But other than that, it was fun to rewatch and catch up on this. A franchise that I have gotten to know since day one because I worked in a movie theater.
Wow.
That was the first summer I worked at Carmike Cinemas in Williamsburg, Virginia, was when Mission Impossible had come out. I think it was either that April or May. It might have been March. But I could, like, on break, just pop in and, like, sneak in, like, watch, like, 10, 15 minutes of a movie.
Yeah.
And usually it was Mission Impossible.
I think it was in May.
I tried to time it with the Langley scene where he's breaking in on the wire. Because that's just so much fun. And then this one coming out, I was like, oh, yeah, sign me up. Cruise has longer hair. He's climbing rocks. He's getting in knife fights. I'm in.
I don't know if I had that with it. First, I do have to go ahead and say, just overall with the series, this one is definitely one that fans sort of like rail against. It doesn't sound like you rail against it, but what do you think is the part that fans are the most like either happy or upset about from this one? Like, what is the thing that they're either, because the hair, happy. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree. But like, I don't know what their biggest issue of it was. Is even I was reading the reviews, there weren't these like, as Tim was saying, there weren't like pitchforks for it.
Mm.
Yeah, what's the gripe?
I don't know. Going back to the Shonda Rhimes effect before the Shonda Rhimes effect had happened, I wonder if that was a reason because, you know, we didn't really have, like, Tom Cruise was like the it guy.
Mm.
And I don't think he's had any other black love interest in his movies. So I'm wondering, you know, could it be one of those situations? Mm. You know how the majority of the fans are these toxic ass.
I mean, not back then. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there was definitely a thing, but it wasn't like a black love interest like that. I don't think was as revolutionary. I don't know, Mark. I don't think so.
It didn't feel like a Jungle Fever revolution to me. But it's also because like this is part of the mission. I think we all like kind of sign up for that. Where it's like, look, if I'm working with somebody on a mission because Anthony Hopkins told me to, and then I happen to end up having feelings for them, that's icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But like, I still have to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where she is trying to break in and steal something towards the beginning of the movie when our now star-crossed lovers meet.
Yeah.
I think that is such a sexy scene.
Yeah.
When they have to hide in the bathtub and they're like on top of each other, it's like, oh my, man, you feel the chemistry because it's not just Tom Cruise's hair.
Yeah.
It's also Tandy Newton's hair. And John Woo knew he had two devastatingly amazing locks of hair. Great lettuce on these two heads.
This is what's so crazy. Asking John Woo, because like we do, I think, need to talk about when we talk about why this movie is rotten, is talk about him because he comes off of Face Off, which is just so camp. Like everything that like Nicolas Cage's character is doing on both sides of that, whether it's being inside John Travolta or when he's with like both of them, they are just like chewing the scenery camp with all of the things. How do you say, let's go make that dude make the freaking bureaucratic CIA show? Like, it seems like very strange that he would even be the person to do this, don't you think?
I feel like the tone was so different than what De Palma did with the first one. But, Crit, I mean, I'm curious with you because John Woo, I kind of first got to know from Hard Target, the Van Damme movie. And, like, that movie loves its slow motion shots. Face Off does, too. I feel like the slow-mo, this movie would be 60 minutes. If we just ran it in normal time.
Yeah.
But there's so much slow motion. Does that take... Because I feel like that's what some critics were saying. This movie's dull. Because it does... You're in a scene and it takes so long because we're like walking through quicksand molasses because we have to show these amazing moves and all this stuff. Does the slow motion get to you?
It didn't get to me. Like I think there was so much action in it for me to balance that out. Like that I didn't even clock that as being something that people would be upset by. Like... And the fact that Tom Cruise is out here doing capoeira, he's giving, he's doing a lot, like a lot of, like, I feel like as far as fighting goes, he was kind of at his most tactical in this, like he's doing acrobatics and stuff. He's giving Liu Kang, like he's doing all these fancy kicks and stuff. I don't know. And then when he kicks the gun up and everything like that, like I was just like, come on now, how are you going to get mad at that?
Action scenes for him though, or what are your favorite action scenes for him where he really sort of like takes the action to the next level in this one? Because I would say that's the thing that everyone at least loved about
One. Well, the motorbikes, absolutely. The motorbike, you know, the dueling, I think that was the jam. And then again, the end fight with Ambrose,
uh-huh.
I feel like he he was killing it. Like, I feel like that's where you see him as at his most physical in a fight across the series.
Yeah, the fighting style he employs at MI2, it's a young man's game.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Ethan Hunt is older now. He doesn't do that crap. I mean, he's still jumping off cliffs.
He left it to Henry Cavill in the last. He was like, let me just leave.
I mean, he does. I will say, he actually does a lot in this last one. I mean, not to, like, let too much away.
He always does, but, like, the way he's contorting his body in the fight scenes and in the rock climbing scene in the opening.
He's breakdancing, like.
But to your point, just sort of, like, comparing and contrasting, like, thinking about last night, I would say last night, there's some scene, and I know which scene you know what I'm thinking of, where it's like this, and, like, that scene, I would say, is the most physical he has done in a long time in one of these movies, and that's, like, it's a scene with him in Palm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would say he's done a lot more recent. Maybe that's the throwback, because I feel like the further we get along, now we start having reverential moments to things, and, like, when you think about this one, it's not just that. There's also, like, there's a lightness to this one. There's a comedy to this one that I think they're also, like, coming back to. Because this, again, it's funny.
Yeah, and you can look at the plot of this movie, and you can also extrapolate it to where we actually started the Mission Impossible as we know now. Because what was Patient Zero? Was it the first Mission Impossible movie? Or was it the rock climbing scene in Mission Impossible 2? Because that's where it's like, oh, Tom Cruise is going to go and do something crazy that no lead actor should ever attempt in every one of these movies. And I still get nervous for him when I'm watching the rock climbing scene, because it just looks scary. He's free solo. He's doing this stuff.
Yeah.
So I was looking it up. He apparently did not have a safety net. There's nothing, like, on the ground to catch him. He had a harness and a thin wire, and he had two stunt guys. And it's so funny to watch the stunt guys interview, because they have the same exact haircut, and they're like, they're ready to do it. And Tom was pretty much like, guys, I got this. And they're like, what? And poor John Woo is setting the cameras up, and he's like, oh, Tom is going to do this? And he's so nervous.
Yeah.
It's just so funny to watch, like, how they were able to pull that off. And, like, I am not a heights guy, all right? I'm scared of snakes, and I'm scared of heights. I do not want to be high on like up on stuff, you know, and, like, look over. So the fact that he's willing to commit to this movie, I think that's one of the big selling points. And it was in the promotional stuff for Mission Impossible 2 as well, is, like, look at what this guy's doing.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
It's also one of those first ones where, like, they're doing things for the behind the scenes DVD. Like, they want to break down everything that they did. It's part of the selling. This was back when DVD sales were, like, huge. And so having those sort of special features where they broke down exactly how Tom Cruise did all of these stunts is, like, worth it, I think, also at the time.
Was this y'all's first Mission Impossible movie in a theater that you saw?
No, I didn't see this one in the theater.
I mean, I'm old, so I saw the original.
You and I saw the original in the theater. Yeah.
Definitely not. I definitely saw both of these on HBO. I think Mission Impossible 3 was...
Which we should give flowers to as well, for sort of like kind of reinvigorating the franchise as well. Mm. After this one.
I think this was back when they still thought they were going to turn Ethan Hunt into James Bond.
Mm.
I think what you really need to appreciate, or what we can appreciate now looking back on these early entries, is, like, after Chris McQuarrie comes on there and sort of, like, changes the style, this last from whatever that is, Rogue or Ghost Protocol forward.
Yeah.
It's the style of the first one modernized. Whereas in before, they were basically having everyone come in and do their own sort of guitar riff. This is the John Woo guitar riff. This is the J.J. Abrams guitar riff. And I think they still realize they're like, as long as we're still doing riffs, this is never going to be a consistent product. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, when you look at it now, that's why these later entries, like, look at it. I think you could look at Ghost Protocol and Dead Reckoning and be like, I know exactly this. They live in the same world. This movie lives on a different planet.
Yeah, and it's almost like, hey, you can pick whoever your team is. And so we get Luther, played by Ving Rhames, who we love in every Mission Impossible movie. And then we also get the Australian helicopter pilot, who's a lot of fun in the movie as well.
I disagree. He gets on my nerves.
You didn't like him?
No. I mean, I lived in Australia for 2 years. Maybe it's triggering, but they overdo it. Hey, mate. Like, every other word is mate. I'm just like,
it's a little Crocodile Dundee.
It was a little Crocodile Dundee. But he was still funny. It was still good comic relief. This is the part of it that made me, I don't know, it made you laugh. Maybe it didn't.
Well, I mean, Ving Rhames, I'm a big Ving Rhames fan, but I feel like, I don't know, just the cast in general, they were, I feel like they're trying to make it as international as possible. Like, you had the South African guy as well. Mm-hmm. He's not even South African. He's Australian and he's putting on a South African accent. So they're trying to diversify it in these interesting, well, maybe not so interesting ways. And yeah, they were really pushing that Australian accent. So.
See, this is where I will go back to, like, this is where I know movie making at that time. Really what it was at that time is the John Woo of it. Mm. It was the fact that John Woo was this international director and they knew people were going to be coming to him looking for a certain type of movie. And I think they were worried about that audience not feeling like this was a John Woo movie. Because, like, I do think it was like, look, they get De Palma on the first one, John Woo on the second. They're trying to find these iconic action sort of directors. And it's like, I wonder if it ends up being something that people like later on. Is there anybody else besides McQuarrie, because he did the one that you really liked, that you sort of look back on the directors? Did you like the J.J. Abrams iteration?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the favorite one?
Wait, which one did J.J. Abrams do?
He did three.
That's Mission Three. I still consider that. I think Christopher McQuarrie took the ball from J.J. pretty well and ran with it, whereas the first two movies feel like their own thing. Mm. I feel like you could trace the lineage of what we get with Dead Reckoning back to MI3.
Back to three? Yeah. No, I agree with that. Three, four, and five, I kind of like all mushed into one for me in a sense. Three, four, five, and six. I mean, six definitely being on the top, but as far as like rating, like how I rate them and that they all kind of, as you said, have the same sort of feeling, or you can.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like I could put on a Mission Impossible 1, 2, and I instantly know which movie
exactly,
I'm watching.
Exactly. Yeah.
From 3 on, I'm like, Ghost Protocol helps because he's got longer hair. He's got the hair back. You guys, by this point of the show, we realize I love these movies because of Tom Cruise's hair.
This is really
like,
it.
As a guy grew up, and my hair is just my hair is unapologetically curly, and you're watching how this straight hair is blowing in the wind, and I'm like, it's never gonna look like that on my head. It's never gonna happen for me.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my only gripe with 4 is that Ving Rhames isn't in it. Like, he's, like, just a little cameo at the end.
He's just barely,
Right. And Paula Penn, you're beautiful, but, like, it's giving great gowns, beautiful gowns. Like,
really?
Yes. She's not giving me anything. She never gives me anything.
Not to pit two black women against each other, but of the two, do you feel like... And her chemistry with him was more believable for it.
But here's the thing, though. Paula Penn's character isn't really a love interest for Tom Cruise.
True.
So it's not the same thing as two. That's why, you know, again, going back to, I just couldn't understand why this film has the bad rating it does. That's why I was kind of, you know, alluding to that. But I think Paula Patton's character is very different as far as, you know, she's part of the ensemble. He's still got Ilsa and his wife kind of, you know, he's got that dynamic going on. So she's, and yeah, they have a little pash, a little kiss, but that's not really part of the romance of it all.
I feel like this movie gets a bad rap, and a lot of the critics, like what Tim was saying, because it's kind of like a dull, like easy story to tell. And I'm like, I kind of needed that after the first one. I still have no idea what is actually happening in the first Mission.
On.
I know there's a knock list we don't want our agents to get out in the open, but there's so much other crap going on between John Boyd and Henry Zerner, who I think is great as Kittredge. So I was just about to say,
I was like, thank you for bringing that back. We need to defend.
He may be acting a little 1960s TV show in but that's sort of the fun.
That's the whole point of it. They're all doing that. And honestly, that scene where he was just like, we've taught him how to do it. That is a great, like, just give me the exposition of why we can't catch this man. That's how you build the legend. That is part of it.
That's how you make him like a Jason Bourne.
Yes.
But it was all exposition, though. That's what I think. Like, the writing was just like,
I agree, it was too much. And so then you get this movie where it's simple. It's like, hey, there's a virus. We got to stop it in time.
There's a virus.
Super easy story to tell.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And an underrated scene in this movie is, because like the end scene is great with like the knife fights and the motorcycles chasing each other. And the beginning, obviously, with the rock climbing. I love the scene where he's breaking into the lab.
Yeah.
That kind of reminded me of like the Langley vibes from the first one. And then we get this really cool shootout and this like, oh, well, I can't shoot her because she literally is the only thing left for this like virus slash cure. So I thought that was like, I forgot about that. And that is maybe what I could use to push this movie into fresh territory.
The music of this one is also something that I think also kicked into high gear, because the very first one did the Mission Impossible like remix. Mm-hmm. And was this the one?
Limp Bizkit, baby.
Yeah, Limp Bizkit. And bow, so like bow, just, bow, bow, it dates it, but it also really, I think, adds more to the movie. And I think this one actually had better music. Is there any part of it that you like? Because there's a lot of needle drops in this one.
No, I like the music. Yeah, I feel like, you know, Limp Bizkit's whatever, but I feel like it worked for this film. Like,
sure.
I enjoyed it.
Go ahead.
No, going back to the scene you're talking about, that going back to the drama of it all, yo, when Tandy Way gives herself the shot, like, it's like drama the whole way. And then even when she's like at the end where it's like, is she gonna get the antidote? And so she's like contemplating jumping off the cliff, like more drama. Like, I feel like that was like going back to, you know, just nice. I like the way that they filmed those.
I didn't realize how much I cared about them as a couple.
Right.
Until that point in the film.
Yeah, that's the whole story.
Like, because, you know, again, if I'm on a mission, Jacqueline knows this about me. When I go out to like a party or something, I'm Irish goodbying every time. I'll do a lap, I'll have a beer, I'm there 15 minutes and I'm out. I never say goodbye, I'm just out. I put in some FaceTime, I'm out. So I'm very non-committal.
Yeah.
So I'm always like coming at this from like, Ethan Hunt, he's a secret agent. He can't have loyalty to anybody. Don't fall in love. Mm-hmm. Don't make friends. Don't do any of that crap. You know, just live for yourself in the mission. But I see them together, I'm like, God damn, I really want them to work out.
But
and they do. Until the beginning of the next movie.
Until the beginning. Again, this is where he's like James Bond. Maybe this is me differently, but I just always think of Ethan Hunt, James Bond. That's why actually I got mad when they started actually like carrying over the women.
Mm.
I just assume that something happened between all of the trauma that you're trying to suppress from all of these missions that made y'all break up in between movies. Like when they carried over his wife, I'm like, no, the episode is over. The girls disappear like the girlfriends on Seinfeld. Like they don't come back. I don't know.
Have I been drinking or is the end of Fallout where like, because he's always kind of keeping tabs on Michelle Monaghan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the end of, I think she met a dude, right?
Yeah.
Julia's with a new man. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So she's got a new dude.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's like, okay, I gotta let this one go.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I was thinking like as we started the Dead Reckoning, I'm like, wait, is she still in the picture? Are we still keeping an eye on her or what's going on? Because I mean, again, by this point, we've done so many secret missions.
Yeah.
People know how to hurt you, Ethan.
Yeah.
So you really can't have any loyalty. I want to know what happened to Tandy Newton's character.
Also, let's talk about the, like, I would say infinite riz of Ethan Hunt. The fact that he is just pulling in every one of these movies. Sometimes he's got like three girls where he's got like something going on with romance, sort of like this
some
one.
Some chemistry, some pheromones. Yeah, yeah.
Is Tandy the top level notch of all of the Mission Impossible women?
Because
I think there may be a dark horse that we've met recently.
I'm putting Tandy right there at the top.
Yeah,
Tandy. Wait, as far as chemistry goes, I feel like they have the best on screen chemistry. But you know, I feel like his soulmate or whatever is Ilsa. Like that's his girl.
That's
right?
That's what I was gonna say. Because I think it's actually Rebecca Ferguson. I think she's now like top girl.
Him and Tandy doing that chemistry, man.
Really?
I know it only lasted one movie. It's like a great season in sports. Like, we didn't keep the team back. This isn't the run of the Bulls in the 90s, all right? This is a one-off, but man, it's like if the Detroit Lions won a Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how it happened, but what a ride.
Yeah.
I did want to talk, too, about, like, just this movie
Go
was
Lions.
At the time. Go Lions.
I think they actually have a shot this year.
Sorry, Lions fans.
I believe
sorry, Packers fans.
That,
no, but we finally got that dude out of here, and you're going to bring this up. What is wrong with you? Like, I'm sorry, you're going to enrage me just by saying
I'm
that.
I'm just saying I don't Jordan love your chances
this year. Oh, my Lord. What team do you support?
The Washington Commanders.
Come on. Glass house, man. anyway, sorry.
Well, I'm not from this country, and so I've got no stakes.
Now we'll bring you back from this American football detour.
Happens every show.
It does happen.
Surprised we held it at bay this long.
I mean, we really did hold it at bay. But at this time, this movie was bigger than this. This is back when they were first doing Ray-Ban movie tie-in like mm-hmm. this. Like, obviously, I know there's been sort of like product and industry placement, but this was like the height of it, the summer movie box office. And again, the thing that cannot be missed is the Ben Stiller Mission Impossible moment at the MTV Movie Awards, where he's like doing a stunt double and he's doing the Tom Cruise laugh. And it was just like, how did we not know how unhinged all of this is? Like, just seeing that parody happen in real time. Like, it's, I don't know. It's so nuts.
Yeah, when
man.
Tom Cruise is climbing the rock and he does that sort of like Jesus move where he's got to like, you know, swing his other arm across. And so yep. now he's just like hanging. And Ben Stiller looks so much like Tom Cruise. Mm. And he was in really good shape yep, then. Yep, like he yep. was a gym rat. So you just put that wig on him and it actually looks like Tom Cruise. It's such a great spoof. And I feel like, Chris, this is the easiest of the Mission Impossible movies to just straight up lampoon yep. if you want to.
Yeah,
It puts itself out there. It takes chances with the way it was shot. And I think as a result, it's very easy to lampoon.
Yeah, I agree. And I think going back to that period, like MTV was, I feel like that was like the pinnacle of the MTV Movie Awards, at least. And I feel like it was the perfect moment to capitalize off, because they lampooned so much. Oh, excuse me. They made fun of a lot of stuff during that time. Yeah, I think they could. Yeah.
Was that the last great era of MTV as far as like music
Close.
And then movies kind of like crossing over?
Like the MTV like died TRL when Kanye there. Took that Moon Man from Taylor. Like that was the end of it. Like that was the like line of demarcation. Seriously.
I can't wait for the 10-part documentary where Jacqueline's a talking head all over the history of MTV. And like, that was the day the music died.
I mean, in my opinion, I honestly do. I do feel that. Also, watching this over again, the one thing I will say, when the doves come up, it's not cheesy to me. It still looks cool.
John
when
Woo
you see all
birds.
These like, or the like, smoke mist mm-hmm. like that he always manages yeah, to make yeah. like every single grate has like smoky stuff, like all of that stuff I would think would make me laugh now and think of it as parody still looks cool. I'm just like that yeah that's badass. I think kids nowadays would think that was cheesy, but I don't know. Would you think Gen Z would be down with John Woo? I don't know
how you can get mad at when he blows up that door and it's like the frame of fire and he like walks past like all moody looking and stuff. It was giving the Crow. I don't know if yes! like the Crow either, but listen.
I'll tell you what vibes that was. That was Michael Myers vibes. That was, I cannot get rid of this guy.
Yeah.
But this guy will not effing
die. He won't die. Yeah, yeah.
I will say one of the reasons why I can't get this movie too high on the tomato meter is I love a good Mission Impossible movie and I love their mask technology. I give you one mask every hour. For every hour of runtime, I'll give you one mask. This movie does a mask like every 10 minutes.
No, you're right.
Every 10 minutes, we're flipping off masks. And it's just, it's a little too much masking for me.
Interestingly enough, I think that's where this franchise goes. It's sort of like once you rely on something, now you got to break it.
Well,
you got to have a
mask scene in every Mission Impossible movie. But this one, I mean, everybody's putting
voice.
Them on, throwing them off.
Because the first ones, they didn't have the voice. Remember that? Because like in the very first movie, and like now they can like tape something on your voice box to make you sound like the person. I mean, it's getting crazy.
No, that's one of my favorite lines of Fallout 2 is when Angela Bassett is like, The IMF is Halloween. It's a bunch of grown men wearing masks trick-or-treating. I was like, yo, she's so right. And I feel like they're relying on it less. The same way like the wire drop in the first one, they stopped doing that at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like they stopped doing this. So I was like, hey, you know what? They're outgrowing this thing. So I don't know, maybe a little less mask.
Before we sort of talk about Dead Reckoning, which is coming, I do think we have to look at the franchise as an overview as far as the stunts. And we've already sort of talked about the one with this one, but like top stunt overall, like of everything that they've done, ooh, if you want to say it's the most memorable, the most crazy. Mm-hmm. Do you want a minute?
Yeah,
know?
I need a minute. You want to
I'm ready to jump in this right now. Again, afraid of heights. I feel like the free solo climb is just an incredible thing to witness. But when you have the ability to say, I climbed the tallest building in the world, and the way that scene plays out in Ghost Protocol, where he's got like the sticky things that he's climbing up, it's just so cool. Because I feel like that would be a really hard thing for me to pull off. I know it sounds scary. Anybody can get strapped to the side of an airplane. maybe not at will, but anybody can do it, and you can survive if you fly, like, at the right altitude and all that stuff. You could strap inside of an airplane right now, I'd have no worries about it.
Really?
Yeah, which is weird, because you're also, like, going into heights there, but climbing heights is different than just, like, being on an airplane. I feel like I could nail the airplane scene. You're just hanging. All you're doing is hanging. I can do that.
Wow, what about you?
Okay, I had some time to think about it, and I think, again, because I get impressed by physicality of things. Like, there's the fear mm-hmm. factor, but then there's also the physicality, and I think it's I want to say it's in Ghost Protocol, where he's tied up and Ilsa kind of comes in to save him, when he's got his hands tied behind his back on that pole, and he literally, like, jimmies, like, he flips himself upside down and, like, gets off the pole that way. Like, that, to me, I mean, I don't know, it's not as scary as or epic as the other ones, but for me, I'm just like, damn, he did that himself, and he, like, he's just a physical specimen to be, you know, just...
He really is, and I'll say, present company excluded. When I say present company, I'm talking about Dead Reckoning. I'm still reckoning with watching the stunt play on that movie, because it is spectacular.
Yeah, that, again, as I will say this, I'm not going to say what happened, because, you know, some of y'all haven't seen it yet, but... In the middle of the theater last night, after in the middle of one of the stunts,
so good. I'm sitting watching right next to her,
and he does something, and I'm just like, he's gonna die. And it was like it was purposeful, but it was also like involuntary. Like, it was like literally, that's I'm like, this man is gonna die. He's gonna die doing this, and we should all be ashamed for making him feel that he has to do this by giving him billions of dollars at the box office. Like, at a certain point, I think I am valuing his life more than he is valuing his life, and I'm just like, I don't know if I can support this. He's gonna die.
Well, here's the interesting thing about where Mission Impossible could be going is because when I heard that Dead Reckoning was going to be like part one and part two, I'm like, oh, that they're going to close the whole thing up with that. But then I heard like Christopher McQuarrie talking about he has ideas for Mission Impossible 9. And I'm like,
my God,
hold on. Is it still going to be Tommy? Is it still going to be? The guy is literally Tom Brady, just like will not retire, and he still ends up being great.
I think every major news organization should have a pre-written Tom Cruise has killed himself on set story written just for like odds. Just good odds says that you'll use it eventually. I don't know when, I don't know where, and I wish Tom Cruise no ill will, but sir, you don't value your life. I just don't think
that
you do.
I'm not saying it's not brave what you did, strap yourself to the side of an airplane. I'm just saying I could do it too.
I am not. I am
saying put me on that plane.
Neither of you should do it. I will just say for my favorite stunt, it's actually proof of what I'm saying about him killing himself. The stunt where he was, it's not a crazy stunt, but he jumps over two buildings.
Oh, and this in was a
the,
fallout.
And this is the one where he broke his foot. The reason why I look at that one is because this man is a madman. Not only does he want to jump on it, but he's so obsessed with the shot, he doesn't show that he got injured. He like walks it off.
Yeah.
And like, that's the shot they use.
In real life.
In real life. He broke and shattered his foot. He doesn't cry. He doesn't scream. He, like, holds it
cracked
in.
Cracked a bunch of ribs.
Just keeps going because the shot is more important. You do not value your life, sir. You think the shot is more important than just, like, doubling over in pain. I would double
but
over
But I love
in pain.
That shot in Fallout because at least people, like, in our space knew. That, like, and it was pretty big news when it happened. Tom Cruise was, like, seriously injured doing a stunt. So we know we're bracing for that to happen.
Yeah.
And then we're like at the scene, he's running on ribs, like, ooh, is this gonna be it? And then you feel it. You feel the air come out of your own lungs when you watch him slam into that wall. But I think it's awesome the fact that he had enough self-awareness to leave that shot in there and not just make it this glossy Ethan Hunt is perfect, he never gets injured. Like, I love that he left it in. He's like, hey, I fail sometimes too. Check this out, it works for the movie.
Yeah.
It's a testament. Also, there is a scene like that in The Lord of the Rings where Aragorn kicks a helmet where Viggo Mortensen stubbed, but he screams. He uses it and makes it into anguish, but he was the bitch we all want to be. He was like, ah! Like, I would not just hold that in. That was ridiculous.
Not me, man. If I do a stunt that goes wrong, I'm yelling, cut. We're not using that. Yeah. Burn the film immediately. Yeah.
Are you excited for Dead Reckoning? Are you going to get this opening weekend? Because it's like, it's weird. I feel like everyone has given up about $200 to the box office this summer. Choices will have to be made.
Listen, I'm all in. Listen, I as I said, the last one was my favorite one out of all of them, Fallout. Like, I feel like you can only go up, especially with the success of like Top Gun Maverick. Mm. Like, it's like, come on, what's next? And I know he's going to deliver. So I sound like a really huge, I sound like a Tom Cruise stan, which I'm not. I just really like this franchise.
I mean, as long as he's making these movies, I will let him make these movies and I will watch them. And that's as much as I will say on the record.
It's hard
but
to not be,
that's
though.
That's all I will right. say.
Because the movies are so good.
So fun.
And like,
yeah.
and like Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick, it's yeah. like, would I like those movies if another actor was playing Maverick? Hell yeah, I would.
Yeah.
It's Top Gun, it's Mission Impossible, but he does lend something special to it.
Yeah.
And I think part of that, he is a great actor. And I think part of it is just because he's doing all this stuff. He's
yeah.
actually
yeah.
flying planes. He's actually climbing buildings. And I think that does add to the experience.
It adds to it. And he is a bona fide movie star. We're going to get out of here, but I just yeah. want to add this. Last year, he was nominated for Top Gun. He showed up at the Oscars luncheon. This is a heavy room. This is famous people who don't talk to famous people, famous people. You know what I mean? He was the most everybody. I mean, everybody. He is a bona fide movie star. The fact that he happens to be insane about jumping out of planes is like the least interesting thing about him. But that wraps it up for us here on Movie Talk.
I feel like that music is great for like Tom Cruise attempting stunts too. It's like, look at this guy. He's up doing this crazy stuff. It's perfect accompany music.
I call it the laughing music because that's what it reminds me of. It suck it to me.
Barry
anyway,
Benny Hill.
Why don't you, sir, Mr. Kritzer, suck us to your socials. Where can folks find you and what are you working on?
Oh, yeah. You can find me at What Would Crit Do, K-R-I-T. You know, kind of little shout out to Jesus. And yeah, what am I working on right now? What's coming up? Yo, listen, I'm exhausted. I just came off AAPI Heritage Month and then Pride Month. So I'm like, I'm not working on nothing if I can help it.
It's nap
yeah,
time.
Yeah, exactly. It's nap time. So keep an eye out. I am working on a video game, but this, you know, still a couple of years out in the making.
Ooh,
so
very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, I'll keep you updated.
And we can probably catch you in the theater this weekend watching
exactly.
Dead Reckoning,
right? Yep, there we go.
Anything else you want to recommend though that you're maybe either watching or want other folks to watch, TV or movie?
I'm just going to give a shout out to all the Pacifica filmmakers out there. I'm a Pacific Islander, and I'm always going to give a shout out and give love to the filmmakers out there. So if you want, you can check out Vai on Amazon, V-A-I, and it really showcases my people in a really beautiful way. So.
Nice,
very
nice.
Cool. Vai on Amazon. I will check that out. All right. Well, that does it for us here on this episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. If you have a film that you feel just as passionately about as Mission Impossible 2, please email us at RottenTomatoesIsWrong@RottenTomatoes.com. And wherever you're listening to this, make sure you review, rate, and subscribe. Mr. Mark Ellis, what are we talking next week?
I think it's in 2 weeks, and I just don't know if I can wait this long to talk about this absolute classic from 1990 that spoke to me as a child and as an adult, the live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
The OG, baby. Shredder, Casey Jones, Splinter, Power.
This is the dark one.
It gets dark.
This is the dark one. Yeah. This is the one that had parents up in arms.
As they should be, but still.
Which
I mean,
is why we got Secret of the Ooze.
You
got
to take care of Shredder somehow. And I won't hear slander against Secret of the Ooze either. Are we really going to do this in a couple weeks?
Yes, we are.
All right.
And you guys can see us here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Again, for Brian Perez, Mark Ellis, and our guest today, Crit, I'm Jacqueline Coley. We'll see y'all next week.